From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The midterm elections intensified this week, and NHPR kicked off a campaign series called Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates at UNH Law. We began Monday with U.S. Senate hopeful Scott Brown. At the event, Brown said he would have voted for President Obama's recent plan to arm some Syrian rebels, and he faulted the president for not doing so earlier.
All of his leadership team said, Mr. President, we need to back the moderate Syrian Free Army. We need to back them. And he rejected that. So here we are playing catch up.
Meanwhile, Governor Maggie Hassan headlined our series on Wednesday. The governor outlined her priorities and her feeling that casino revenues could be a way to pay for them. That's despite skepticism in some corners that the Northeast is already saturated with gambling destinations.
The experts, as they do their analysis, indicate that there is still a market for a high-end casino in New Hampshire, just as there is, a variety of different venues in any number of industries and entertainment throughout our region.
But beyond politics, the story that many Granite Staters were talking about was the weather forecast, specifically the Old Farmer's Almanac prediction for another really cold winter. Here's Sarah Peralt, the magazine's senior associate editor.
Most of the Northeast is going to have above average snow, but in New England, we're looking for below average snow. So probably as cold as last year, but not as much snow.
No matter what the weather, we bring you the top stories of the week on our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. So let's hear from you on these and other items. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the roundup this week are Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Gary Reno, Statehouse reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, I want to talk to you guys first about something that happened last weekend on Saturday. Dean Spiliotis, the state Republican Party had its convention. Remind us just what happens at these conventions and how important they are.
Yes, both the New Hampshire GOP and the Democratic Party have these annual conventions. It's really an opportunity to unify the party behind the slate of candidates. It's part pep rally. It's part bureaucracy in terms of dealing with platform issues, et cetera. It's really a chance to get everybody together in one place, at least all the activists in the party, leading up to the November election. And this year, the NHGOP held a convention down at SNHU. I don't think that's an endorsement of the GOP. They have a very nice banquet facility there that you can rent. I've been in it many times. So it happened to be there this year. Kelly Ayotte spoke. They had a special guest, Carly Fiorina, the former Hewlett-Packard CEO. She's now running a nonprofit called Unlocking Potential. It's really geared at getting women involved in politics. So she kind of gave a pep speech. It's basically a way to get everybody on the same page and deal with we'll talk in a moment. They dealt with this personhood amendment to the state GOP platform. So it's just it's an interesting opportunity to kind of get everybody geared up for the election.
And from what I understand, Dean, there was a lot of positive energy. Republicans in New Hampshire are feeling pretty good about their chances this year.
Yeah, we've talked for a long time about the possibility of another Republican wave. If you think about 2010 and the Tea Party and the way in which Democratic gains in 06 and 08 were pushed back significantly. I think Republicans feel like that energy is out there again. President Obama's approval rating is quite low, down in the low 40s, high 30s in some places. That typically is a bad sign for an incumbent party at a midterm election, particularly in a second term for a president. So, the political scientists are looking at this closely, and the sort of the evidence on the size of the wave is kind of mixed. But they certainly have. Reason for some optimism that it might be a good year for taking back some or all of the statewide offices.
Now, Gary, there was some attention to the fact that they had this convention, lots of speeches and people sort of rallying and feeling good. But then they went into closed session. Now, is that how it's normally done?
Well, occasionally that is how it is done. But in the past, they've been open discussions about the plank and the bylaws and so on. They did happen to close it because I think they knew that they were going to have a heated debate over some issues that were going to be brought up, because there was an attempt to make the party plank a little more, shall we say, gay friendly, or a little more inclusive for people who same sex marriage, et cetera. And that got voted down. But what got voted up was this personhood amendment proposal, which would give basically says that if you a preborn child has a fundamental right to life and personhood under the 14th Amendment, and which essentially would end all abortion if we know it. And they adopted that amendment.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Gary, the 14th Amendment defines citizenship in the United States. Yeah. People who are born here, people who are naturalized, it defines their rights under the Constitution, or their entitlement to that protection under the Constitution. And this is a debate that was really big in 2012 at the National Party Convention, in which they also adopted a call for a constitutional amendment, essentially enshrining this, and it would essentially ban all abortions, basically.
Mm-hmm. And this got Scott Brown into an uncomfortable position, right Gary? Because he describes himself frequently as a pro-choice Republican.
And so he was in the inevitable position of having to say, no, I don't agree with this. I don't agree. I certainly buy into the fact that we're a united party and believe in the Republican plank, et cetera, but I can't agree to this.
Well, and in fairness, not every candidate agrees with every single piece of the plank.
Absolutely.
I mean, we see this
not.
All the time.
It's all the time. It's frequent that the candidates disagree with some part of the plank or not, both sides of the aisle.
Well, and this came up in our Rudman Center conversations with the candidates that NHPR and the Exchange kicked off this week. We asked Scott Brown about that. So if people want to listen back to that conversation, it's all at nhpr.org. And in a couple minutes, I want to ask both of you guys about a few other themes that came up at that conversation with Scott Brown Monday night. But first, Gary, to you, Walt Havenstein, the Republican candidate for governor, also had a busy week.
He did. He started the week signing Pledge 2.0, which sounds an awful lot like the old pledge to veto a sales and income tax. But he tacks on this thing about, I will also oppose unfunded obligations, which I take it to mean things that probably come up during the budget cycle that are not in the budget that somehow have to get funded, such as, for example, the mental health settlement that occurred last year, and also the MET agreement with the hospitals, the Medicaid Enhancement Tax agreement with the hospitals, which the governor had negotiated last summer. So those are the things that he was referring to, is saying that these are driving the budget toward some kind of broad-based tax because they're not funded in the budget itself. But when you say unfunded obligation, I mean, it's essentially that's what the budget process is all about, finding the money to fund what you have to fund and then not funding the things you don't have to fund.
Yeah, you know, I think the argument that you're going to have a broad-based income tax at the state level because you're spending you can make that argument. Governor Hassan has been very firm about her opposition to those kinds of taxes. So, I don't know whether or not the link is necessarily there, but that's certainly the case that Walt Havenstein wants to make. You know, this issue of unfunded mandates has popped up before. If you go back to 2009 in the Obama stimulus package during the recession, there were several conservative governors. I'm thinking of Bobby Jindal of Louisiana and Governor Sanford of South Carolina. And the stimulus package gave money to the states to increase some social services and other benefits for individuals who were struggling in the recession. And these governors basically refused the money on the grounds of an unfunded mandate that, the federal government gives money for a couple years and then the money runs out, but then you got to keep paying for that unfunded mandate. So they use the 10th Amendment, which is a reserve power of the states to say, you can't force us to do this. Same argument they made unsuccessfully on Obamacare. Interestingly enough, the state legislatures in both cases took the money anyway, even though the governor said that these unfunded mandates are dangerous.
Well, talking again about the Rudman Center conversations with the candidates that we had, let's talk about the Scott Brown event, because there were a lot of themes that we have talked about on this program, guys, before. I also want to invite our listeners to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. It's the Friday New Hampshire Hampshire News Roundup, a favorite hour on the Exchange. And we hope you join us with your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. So, guys, terrorism concerns definitely came up Monday night. The concerns about ISIS, what that group is doing, President Obama saying, okay, let's arm the moderate Syrian rebels. And we played a clip of Brown in the beginning saying he agreed with that policy. In fact, he thought that President Obama should have gone earlier. But the terrorism concerns have once again raised the immigration debate. We talked to Brown about that as well. Here's where I asked former Senator Brown what he thinks the policy should be toward the estimated 11 million people already here illegally. Do you deport those 11 million
people?
No,
I don't think you're talking about deporting. I've never said the word deport. I don't believe that. I've said if there is a pathway to working, not a pathway to citizenship necessarily, but a pathway to working, I'm listening. But it, once again, whatever it includes, it can't include those incentives and those rewarding of that illegality.
Yeah, so immigration, a tough issue, Gary Reno, for Republicans and Democrats this fall.
It is. It's a hot-button issue, and so hot-button that it caused the president not to go forward with some initiatives that he was going to make in the immigration area. But it's back and forth, and, it's been a hot-button issue, particularly in that Senate race, as to what you do about those 11 million people. And there are no easy answers. And I think that's what we're finding out, that there are no easy answers.
Yeah. And we'll be talking to Brown's opponent, sitting U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, on Tuesday night. Real quick thoughts from you, too, Dean, about immigration and just how tough it is for these candidates to navigate this issue.
It is very difficult. It's a hot button issue. It's a litmus test for conservatives in the Republican Party nationally. They feel very strongly about it. You know, Scott Brown and a lot of other Republican candidates have now tied in the terrorism issue to the southern border, the idea being that these ISIS terrorists may use either valid passports or just other means to get across the border, and then that will sort of lead to a new round of domestic terrorism. There's some debate about the likelihood of ISIS terrorists coming across the southern border, but that's where the debate is now. It's been rolled into terrorism.
All right. Well, in just a moment, we will look more closely at our conversation with Governor Maggie Hassan. That was on Wednesday night. Also, a Time magazine report says New Hampshire's incarceration rate tops the nation despite our low crime rate. Wow. I found that really interesting, guys. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, let's check in with NHPR's Fall Fund Drive. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. We're covering some of the stories that made headlines this week. In a moment, we'll look at a headline from Time magazine that finds New Hampshire's incarceration rate tops the nation despite our very low crime rate. Time titled its article, Live Free or Be Incarcerated. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But Dean Spiliotis, Gary Reno, let's finish up talking about some of the election-related activity this week. And Dean, before the break, we were talking about how important foreign policy has become in these midterm elections. That's a shift. It's been about the economy for a couple election cycles now. And Scott Brown, U.S. Senate candidate on the Republican side, gave a major foreign policy speech this week.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, typically when you look at polling data on most important issues to voters, you know, number one is always the economy. Number two is jobs. Three is health care. And then usually around four or so, you get to international security. But in sort of moments of heightened tension and anxiety with these sort of high visibility examples we've had of executions and now the bombing in Syria and Iraq, it does raise in terms of an issue for people. So Scott Brown is somebody who's actually been getting a fair bit of praise from national Republicans for really pressing Jeanne Shaheen hard on foreign policy. He's running this ad now in which he basically says, you know, Jeanne Shaheen is, they use the word confused on foreign policy, and they question why she was absent from some. She's on Senate Foreign Relations and Senate Armed Services, why she missed a number of hearings, some dealing with the ISIS threat. It's gotten so bad, in fact, that Madeleine Albright jumped in to defend Jeanne Shaheen recently. She was Secretary of State under Bill Clinton. So foreign policy is a big issue. You know, Scott Brown, and also actually there's an interesting visual in his ad where, you know, he's a retired military. So they show him in his fatigues juxtaposed with, you know, why wasn't Jeanne Shaheen at these hearings? So
they National Guard, right?
National Guard. Yeah, he was, a colonel in the reserves but he has time and again gone back to his service. And, you know, you listen to what he says on foreign policy. He's not overly prescriptive. He's leaving himself a fair bit of wiggle room. But he is someone who you know, always says he wants to keep all of his options open. So I think they believe that given the circumstances, he may actually get some traction on this issue. And it's not necessarily something that is resonating in every race, but he's made a focus of it in recent weeks here.
Sure. And again, if folks want to listen to what Scott Brown said about foreign policy, that was right at the top of our conversation with him on Monday when we kicked off our campaign series, Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates at UNH Law. Scott Brown was first on Monday. Check out the website for a complete schedule. And since you mentioned Shaheen, Dean, I want to let everybody know Senator Shaheen will be with us on Tuesday. Also this week, Gary Reno, Governor Hassan was with us on Wednesday, and we talked about a lot of issues, including energy. And I got to say, it was, you know, hard to pin Governor Hassan down on the Northern Pass issue. I wonder how you see that playing out in this race for governor.
Well, Northern Pass is an issue that really resonates in the North Country in particular, where there is no transmission lines now and where you would have to somehow either bury them or cut a swath through the woods to do that. I'm not sure it resonates quite so much down south, but what it does resonate is this whole issue of energy in New Hampshire, because once again we're finding out that it's going to be very expensive this winter to heat our homes and to buy electricity, largely due to the natural gas issue. We have a constrained pipeline coming into New England. And so when we get into the cold weather, the pipelines really can't handle all the natural gas that really you could use here in New England. By rule or whatever, the natural gas first has to go to heat homes. And what's left over can then go to the electric generating plants. And as a result, the price of electricity is expected to be very, very high this winter.
Wow. Okay. And we did talk about the pipeline issue with Governor Hassan. And it does seem like, and Dean, we've talked about this before, that for New Hampshire races, energy is becoming a defining issue.
Yeah, it is an important issue. It's something I've asked the governor about before, and she is a little difficult to pin down. I think the reality is that, you know, governors can do some things regarding energy. They can kind of provide overall guidance and maybe kind of figure out what a balanced plan might look like going forward. But the reality is all of these projects, when we talk about them here every Friday, really come down to, you know, site review, federal regulatory committee, regulatory decisions, et cetera, and community opposition. So the reality is, you know, it's important for a governor to have kind of an overarching vision of how to deal and also be prepared to deal with spot crises in terms of winter heating, et cetera. But the reality is these projects come down to, you know, community opposition, the need for federal regulatory review, and then the sort of state site committee as well on a lot of these projects. So it puts governors in a tough position. There's only so much they can do.
Right, and there's been a lot of pushback too, because the governor, New England governors, got together and said we want to encourage this pipeline enlarging the pipeline for the natural gas. I mean, they no more than said that, and there was opposition all over the place.
Yeah, communities, so, yeah.
Communities, in the same way with Northern Pass. I mean, there's opposition there. Wherever you do, there's going to be people who don't like it.
Yeah, and I asked the governor how she breaks through that. It's a tough question. Mm-hmm. We also talked in our forum with Governor Hassan on Wednesday about Republican proposals to cut business taxes. And that's been, as you guys said earlier, Walt Havenstein's one of his big ideas is to cut business taxes. Here's Governor Hassan's response to that.
That goes mostly to very large corporations. They're often from out of state. They're often multinational corporations. And that would be a $90 million hole in our budget. And that $90 million has to be cut from somewhere. So I think it's really important that people think hard about what they wouldn't invest in this budget, a budget that had the most bipartisan support in over a decade.
And Gary, just to be super clear, we were talking about Walt Havenstein's proposal to cut business profits taxes,
business taxes.
Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Which is, I mean, it's a very high rate compared to other states. But
so the idea is to encourage businesses to come in
and so on. But I mean, she's absolutely right. I mean, it's large corporations that pay it. It's not really the mom and pop businesses that pay it. They pay the business enterprise tax. So if you're talking about encouraging people to come in, probably if you want to cut tax, some business taxes, you'd be much better off to cut the business enterprise tax, because that would really affect a lot of small businesses, which as we know in New Hampshire, is what really drives the economy.
Well, and Walt Havenstein will be part of this Redmond Center conversations with the candidates as well. So we'll ask him about that. But go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, it's a nice little snippet of economic populism from the governor. Nothing wrong with that in an election year. You know, go against the big corporations who are taking money out of the state. It's interesting, you know, Walt Havenstein pushing for this tax cut. You know, he really is kind of voicing something I hear from Republicans in the business community that, you know, is sort of in general compared to other states, New Hampshire's economic indicators are good. But for them, the reality is that the business climate in terms of attracting new investment and new business is not very good. The rate of growth is slower than other states in New England. The business climate is not inviting to companies that might want to come in from out of state. So I think what Havenstein is trying to do is articulate that set of concerns among business elites in the state. But it's not a very kind of sexy thing. It's hard to get traction as a campaign issue. But I hear that all when I talk to different groups and I hear from people, Republicans in business, that's the complaint, that the business climate, because of these taxes, is not particularly good for attracting new investment.
And more broadly, Dean, right? I mean, there are outside observers, outside the sort of political back and forth, who do say that New Hampshire has slipped in terms of its economic leadership.
Right. You know, we've had this conversation for a while now about the New Hampshire advantage and whether that advantage is slipping and just, you know, what is the cause of it and are there things that the governor and state legislature can do? And that's been the debate.
I mean, it's been a real issue for quite a while. And what they're really talking about is the loss of manufacturing in New Hampshire. I mean, we've gone from a large number of manufacturers. We've lost most of those to overseas. And what we have now is a real service and retail economy. And that's going to be harder to move than it is if you have something large manufacturer come in. That makes a big difference as opposed to these small little steps with service industries and retail.
Well, here's some Facebook comments on this Walt Havenstein 2.0, the plan to cut business taxes. Some of our Facebook folks liked it. Some of them didn't. Dave says take a good look at Kansas, for example, for what Republican tax cutting does. Basically nothing but concentrate wealth in fewer and fewer hands while leading to major cuts in spending and crushing the economy. So that's from Dave on Facebook. Scott says don't become like Vermont. Vote for Walt. So I want to thank both of those folks for jumping in on Facebook into this conversation. Speaking of, we're not number one anymore in terms of leading New England's growth. Gary, I think you know where I'm going to go with this. Boy, Time Magazine, real interesting story. It says despite a steady and not very large crime rate, New Hampshire's number of state and federal inmates has increased. How come? What's going on there?
Just before we started on this, the commissioner of corrections, Bill Wren, said that these numbers actually aren't quite accurate because what they did was they took the state's numbers and then they added in the county inmates as well as federal inmates, when actually, in fact, the state numbers that the state gave them included those. So it's not quite as large as it looks, but it's still large. I think we have to go back a while and talk about the truth in sentencing laws that we passed, which is everybody has to stay at least until their minimum sentence. So we all of a sudden have a lot of people in prison. And it's been growing, growing, growing. In about 2008, the state lawmakers and leaders decided they needed to do something about this because the state prison population was just growing, 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 and costing more and more money. And they decided to come up with this thing called the Justice Reinvestment Act.
I remember that. They brought in some outside experts and it was a big deal.
And the idea basically was they were looking at it and they said, where is the growth coming from in the prisons? And number one, they said a large part of it are people who are returning to the prisons, the recidivism rate. And a lot of those people are people who maxed out of their sentences. They were released. They weren't on parole. They could do whatever they want. And sure enough, they were coming right back into the prison system. So what can we do to keep these people out of the prison system? So they came up with this plan to, instead of just releasing them 9 months before they go to be released, they go into the community in a sort of halfway house, and you support them with services that will help them adjust to life outside prison, such as job training, substance abuse counseling, etc. Well, when this program started kicking in, some of the first people that they released were the really bad apples.
Uh-oh.
And sure enough, a couple of them got into trouble right off. And sure enough, a couple of them were in Manchester, so they became kind of exploded. And all this bad publicity, it ended up being a political football in the 2010 gubernatorial race.
I remember that between John Lynch and John Stephen. Yep.
And so in 2011, the legislature basically pulled back and said, okay, we're not going to release all these people. There are only these nonviolent people who can be released, and the parole board is going to regain the authority that the program basically took from them. And as a result, we've seen the prison population grow again to the point where it's actually higher now than it was when they started this in 2008.
Well, very interesting. Definitely caught my attention, but I appreciate you sort of offering a caveat on the numbers. So that's good. Another story, again, where New Hampshire has a dubious honor this week, Dean Spiliotis. We've got among the highest cancer rates in the country.
Yeah, this is interesting, although when you really think about it, it probably shouldn't be all that surprising. The two that were particularly high, the rate of prostate cancer among men and breast cancer among women. Prostate cancer, you tend to get it if you're an older male. New Hampshire has a lot of retirees. It's one of the old – in terms of kind of the median age, it's one of the – I think number three or four oldest population in the country. So you have a lot of retirees up here. You're going to have a higher rate of prostate cancer. Breast cancer, the rate is high, but we also have one of the highest rates of screening in the country. So the thinking there is the more you look, the more you're going to find. So, yeah, you know, you hear this headline and you're like, wow, we have high cancer rates. But you can explain the data between the kind of the aging population for prostate cancer and the high levels of screening among women for breast cancer. It kind of takes the edge off the story a little bit. It's really driven by demographics.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. Make me feel a little bit better.
Trying to make everybody feel a little better, both my male and female friends.
Right. Well, speaking of feeling better, some people will like the Old Farmer's Almanac prediction for this coming winter. Some people will not. The almanac says it's going to be another cold one, but less snowy, so people can interpret that however they want. We'll find out a little bit more after a break. Also, a new test for New Hampshire teachers that some people are calling a bar exam for teachers, the TCAP. We've got a couple Facebook comments on that as well. All that's coming up on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Stay with us, but first let's check in with our fall fun drive. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, a couple other stories I wanted to follow up on, but here's an email that came in from Nancy. She says, one clarification about prostate cancer incidence and all cancer incidence rates. Nancy says, the CDC statistical calculation called age adjusting takes into account the older population demographics of the state. So, for example, although New Hampshire, Florida, and other states may have more retirees, this does not account for the higher cancer incidence rates. Nancy says, unfortunately, breast and prostate cancers are very common, and New Hampshire may be doing a better job of screening for both. And I think, Dean, we could add that because New Hampshire is a wealthier state, people do tend to have health insurance, and so they get the screening. So it's kind of sort of a good news, bad news thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very helpful clarification. You know, statistics can be adjusted for all kinds of demographics. So it sounds like that's what they've done. But the screening obviously is the key thing regardless.
Right. Nancy, thank you very much for that email. And I did want to ask you, Dean, and you, Gary, people are looking ahead to winter already. I'm not very happy about that. I'm still kind of getting over the fact that it's not summer anymore. But my personal feelings aside, what did the Old Farmer's Almanac say this week, Dean, about this winter?
Yeah, this is interesting. For anybody who doesn't know this, and I did not, the almanac comes out of Dublin, New Hampshire. Mm. So it is a local enterprise.
With national recognition.
Well known, yep, absolutely. The Farmer's Almanac says winter 2015, we're going to have below normal temperatures here in New England, but also below normal snowfall. That the rest of the Northeast is going to have above average snowfall, so mid-Atlantic storms, but not New England. We're going to be colder, but a bit drier as well.
Yeah, so we can go skiing in New Jersey? Is that?
That sounds like the idea, right? I think a lot of people would probably prefer higher temps and maybe a little more snow, but it doesn't sound like it's in the cards, at least according to the almanac.
Yeah, it kind of depends on who you are. We were talking about it this morning. Some people who ski would say that's bad news. If it's going to be cold, we might as well have snow.
At least they can blow snow.
Yeah, and someone else chimed in, well, she said, I hate cold and snow, so at least I only have to put up with having it. Speaking of cold, Gary Reno, there's a lot of concern at the New Hampshire Attorney General's office office about Fred Fuller Oil. This is a oil heating company that's had a lot of problems.
A lot of problems last winter. They were late deliveries or no deliveries at all. And they're being sued by one of their suppliers, Sprague Corporation out of Newington, one of the largest suppliers of heating oil in the state. And basically for non-payment. So the AG's office has gotten – and the Attorney General's office has gotten involved, and they're sort of watching it because Fred Fuller has about 2,000 people on pre-buy contracts who've already paid for the oil essentially. And if they're not going to be able to get it because they're not paying for it, then we're going to have more and more problems. It's going to look a lot like it did last winter where – they were not getting – people were not getting their oil when they were supposed to get it or if at all.
Yeah. So haven't a lot of people switched already, Gary, given what happened last year?
Well, they have, but there are only so many heating oil companies in the state.
I see.
Honestly. And Fred Fuller is one of the larger ones and covers a larger area. And so they're when they're in trouble, if it looks like they're in trouble a little bit, then there are going to be a lot of people that's going to have some problems.
Fuller had 30,000 customers. I don't know what it's down to now, but this may become one of those self-fulfilling prophecies where the Sprague Energy is claiming that they owe almost $5 million and they want to basically seize the delivery trucks and other equipment to pay the bill. That may cause people to panic and basically switch anyway, so they may lose business as a result.
Yep.
Another story that caught our attention this week is about a test some are calling a teacher bar exam. Gary, I want to start with you on this. As early as next year, college students in New Hampshire teacher prep programs will be taking a new test. What's this about?
Well, it's an attempt to try to standardize teaching, like a teaching certificate, the way what your requirements are for a teaching certificate and what you have to do. Because in the past, it's been all over the place. That various colleges had various requirements and programs. And this is a way of saying that all these people who really will graduate from this program are essentially competent and they have done all these things that they need to do. It used to be pretty wide open in terms of teaching certification.
Do other states?
A lot of states are going to this. A lot of this has to do with the No Child Left Behind Act, which raised the bar for the teaching profession in
a
big way.
Yeah. NHPR covered this. I think it's called the TCAP, something like that. Kneecap, TCAP. Got a couple Facebook comments on this. Caitlin says if New Hampshire wants to attract great teachers, they should offer support for and mandate a master's degree like we do in Massachusetts and raise their salaries to be more competitive. Thank you, Caitlin, for that. Chris says New Hampshire has great teachers, as does Massachusetts, but it's undoubtedly harder for New Hampshire to maintain them due to uncompetitive salaries. Not requiring an M.Ed. is just another way for school districts to justify inadequate pay, in my opinion. So a couple Facebook comments from our listeners on that new TCAP test. A sober story, Dean Spiliotis, out of my hometown of Keene, Robin Williams. A memorial sprung up there. 6 weeks ago, I think Robin Williams died. Mm-hmm. Where did this memorial spring up from? Just remind us.
In 1994, Robin Williams filmed the movie Jumanji in Keene and the surrounding area. Some people may have seen the movie. And so there's kind of been this connection to Robin Williams through the movie for many years. And I believe there's a mural relating to the movie and this impromptu memorial. Memorials have become increasingly common for all kinds of public figures, candles, cards, flowers, toys, etc. Just kind of left
teddy
at
bears.
Some. Yeah, teddy bears. And some of them can get quite large. And so, a couple individuals have suggested that maybe this is in some way, glamorizing or memorializing suicide. And they've suggested that maybe the city council that typically when somebody dies in the state, we lower flags for 30 days. This has now been 6 weeks. Maybe it's time to take this down. And so I think the individual was invited to testify before a city council committee, and then the committee can recommend to the full council removing the memorial. So that's the issue.
Yeah, it's right downtown.
There's also a concern about the Pumpkin Festival, which is such a large event in Keene, and that if this was still there, there could be some problems and some issues with with that. So actually, I think they took a vote on Wednesday night, the committee did, to say basically 2 or 3 days before the festival, please remove your stuff. And it's going before the council next week.
I see. Yeah. And large, I think, is an understatement for the Pumpkin Festival. I think humongous would better be a better word. Well, gentlemen, next week on The Exchange, boy, we've got a busy week. Our series of Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates continues. As I said, it was Scott Brown and Maggie Hassan this week. Next week, we've got U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen on Tuesday. Again, if folks want to attend these or just find out more, you can check out the complete schedule at nhpr.org. These events are free and open to the public. You do have to register, though. So that's on Tuesday night. We'll play that interview on Wednesday morning. And then political junkie Ken Rudin will be back with us on Thursday. So we're excited about that, too. Lots going on here in The Exchange next week. How about you, Gary Reyna? What are you doing next week?
Oh, the politics, obviously, are heating up a great deal. And also the Executive Council is meeting on Wednesday. They should probably be voting on the 3 judicial nominees that the governor put forth. There's a public hearing on Monday for the 3 of those, so we'll see what happens there.
Okay, so even though the legislature's out of session, the Executive Council is still
meets, yes.
Interesting.
Meets year-round.
Okay, that's interesting because my husband has some friends visiting from Texas, and they went to visit the State House. And Executive Counselor Joe Kenney was there, and he was chatting with them and giving them a little bit of the lore and history of the state. So I was wondering about that. Thanks for connecting the dots for me there.
This council meeting, they're doing their tour around the state right now, and this is the last meeting where they're going to be outside of Concord, and they're actually meeting at the food bank in Manchester on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. So you'll be covering that. How about you, Dean?
Politics full time. I'm going to be talking with Marilinda Garcia, the Republican candidate for the 2nd congressional district seat. I'll put a link up on my website after that is recorded. And then just following all the action. There's just a lot going on. The situation seems to be developing on the ground pretty quickly with the foreign policy as an issue, and we'll see where it all goes.
Right. Okay. Well, I will definitely take a look at that Marilinda Garcia interview. We'll be speaking to Ms. Garcia, too, as part of our series, and you can check out, again, the complete schedule at nhpr.org. Gentlemen, I know you're super busy. I really appreciate you coming in, giving us some of your time. Gary Reyna, thanks a lot.
Great to be here, Laura.
That's Gary Reyna, again, State House reporter for the Union Leader, New Hampshire Sunday News. Dean Spiliotis, good to see you.
Sure thing, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. Let's check in now with our fall membership drive.